The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, March 17th, 2025.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. And with me at the board this morning is my partner, my co-producer, my engineer, my webmaster, my all-around support, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
Oh, what a beautiful morning it is here in Sonoma County. And as you know, this is National Women's History Month. And it was made possible here right in Sonoma County by the National Women's History Project, now called the National Women's History Alliance. A shout out to my dear friend Molly McGregor for all the work that she's done over the past 40 years. And, you know, folks, if you go and visit our website, www.womenspaces.com, you'll hear an interview with the new executive director for the National Women's History Alliance. And it continues to go on. Even though at this particular time in history, women are really, really struggling to hold on to their rights. I'm very, very excited this morning because I have a very special guest with me, Dr. Kim Hester Williams, who is a professor at Sonoma State University. She teaches women's and gender studies, among many, many other things. I'm going to have Kim tell us all about herself. I mean, she has an amazing background and brings such wealth and such information to the airs this morning. Particularly, we're going to be celebrating women of color. And what's very, very interesting about the interview we're going to do today, Kim has selected five very prominent women, which I'll have her talk about. And these are women that when she starts shouting out their names, I don't think I knew all of them. So I'm very, very interested in hearing what she has to say. I have one announcement, and that is the National Organization for Women, the Sonoma County Chapter, this evening will be holding their monthly business meeting, executive committee meeting, and they're going to have a special guest on, Elaine Rock, who's going to be talking about another woman who made history, and that's Dusty Rhodes, who really turned around the airline industry, which was really an amazing feat. And I'm really excited about hearing that. Hopefully, I will be having Elaine Rock on next month. And I have a special announcement. After this show, I'm going to be taking a little bit of a sabbatical, about three shows. I think we're going to be doing reruns. Isn't that about it, Ken? Three shows. I'm having some really issues with my eyes, which is, oh my God, it's such a challenge. Let me tell you something. If I didn't have some sort of spiritual program, I think I would be going crazy because it's very, very difficult for me to see. And that's why we're going to be running the program just a little bit different for our segment and our history is our strength. That's when Dr. Williams is going to be talking about these wonderful, wonderful women that she has chosen to discuss. And I have to say that today is St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. And I got to tell you a funny story. This is so funny. I'm born March 18th. So tomorrow actually is my birthday. I can't believe it, guys. I'm going to be 85 years old. I mean, I woke up this morning and I said, are you really that old, Elaine? And I said, yep, you're that old. You've made it this far. By the way, I'm going to be a great grandmother for the third time. If we were in a Native American culture, I would probably be chosen to be on the women's council. And they were the ones who made the decision whether the natives went to war or not, and had a lot of emphasis and a lot to say during those times. And it seems like today women are just put under the bus. You know, it's very, very, very interesting. But I was born March 18th, 1940, and what happened is very interesting. During that time, my mother, when she got pregnant, she found out she was going to have a cesarean. And so what happened was is the doctor told her she would have to come into the hospital on March 17th. Am my mother said, no way is my daughter going to be born on St. Patrick's Day. Although I think that would be kind of fun, you know, with all the holidays and all the different things that go the way they celebrate St. Patrick's Day. So anyway, she says, no way. So I ended up being born on March 18th, 1940. And what's very interesting, I don't know if folks know, but there's a gentleman by the name of Edgar Casey. They called him the Sleeping Prophet. And I think, okay, well, if I'm going to be born in any day, I might as well be born on his birthday. It's just amazing. Well, anyway, I thought since I'm sitting right next to a real Irishman, his name is Ken Norton. Ken, you know, St. Patrick's Day is a real mystery to me. You know, I know they have parades. You know, I'm wearing green. Dr. Williams is wearing green. I thought when she came in, if she didn't give, you know, when we were kids, we would punch you if you didn't have green on. So go ahead, tell us a little bit. Do you know anything about St. Patrick? I mean, some history or how can we relate to St. Patrick today?
Well, I'm actually half Irish. My mother brings in Irish to me, and she has ancestors that go back to County Meath. And in County Meath, there are some shrines to St. Patrick as having preached there. So my mother's ancestors have been exposed to Roman Catholicism since that time. Since St. Patrick was a Briton, he was the first captured by the Irish as a slave. And he was able to escape after 6 years. He then became a Catholic cleric, and he went back to Ireland to convert the Irish to Catholicism from their pagan ways. And that's what is meant when they say that St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland. What they meant by that is the pagan, earth-friendly religion that was in Ireland. So I can just say that St. Patrick's Day was made very popular, especially in America, with the big parades. You know, the Irish immigrants here, of which there are many, they honored St. Patrick. It was what brought them together and helped them to fight off the discrimination against them, as all migrant peoples to the United States have realized. It's hard to assimilate. It takes a struggle, and that's what it represents to the Irish Catholics.
Well, that, thank you so much for sharing that. And also, I want to wish all my Irish brothers and sisters out there a happy St. Patrick's Day, you know. And you know, we don't recognize it on this country enough, is that we are a country of immigrants. I mean, when I think about it, I mean, I'm only a first-generation American of my father. My father came from Poland during when they had pogroms and they had to escape. In fact, my grandmother came over from Poland to the United States, didn't particularly like it, went back, and then all of a sudden World War I broke out and there was horrible persecution of the Jewish population, and she had to escape. You know, my other grandmother who came from Russia, the same thing happened. In fact, there's many, many films that show what was happening to these people, that these pogroms would just come into their little, they called them shtetls, and just kill them. And also with the Irish coming here into the United States, you know, it wasn't very easy. Many of them came over as indentured servants, which was a form of slavery in itself. And also there was the potato famine and all the different things that happened that brought people to this country. And this was a country of opportunity, and they were welcomed with open arms. Yes, come all. I mean, look at our Statue of Liberty, what it says, all the different ideas that we have about immigrants. So it's very, very important that we recognize this. And right now, you know, I was listening to the radio. We always listen to Amy Goodman before we come on, and I'm listening to some of this stuff that's going on in the world, especially this latest, I guess there was a budget bill passed. I don't quite understand it, but I'm going to learn a little bit more about it. But it seems like people are just so rattled, and it feels like so many things have happened in the last few weeks, you know, that all of a sudden that our democracy is at stake. I mean, it was bad enough that when you found out that women's rights just about were torn away from them. I mean, taking away Roe versus Wade really eliminated the possibility of women having choice over their own body. You know, that's very scary. And when you start looking and you start looking at the history of women, and particularly here in Sonoma County, you see the struggle to have a voice, the struggle to be heard. So there's a lot to think about. And I want to remind my listeners one more time is that tonight they're going to be having the National Organization for Women. It's just called NOW, the Sonoma County chapter. And I want to direct you to their website, or rather their Facebook. It's and their website. It's nowsonomacounty.org. No?
NowSonoma.org.
Oh, NowSonoma.org. Thanks, Ken. It's amazing to have my buddy here on the side. He helps make corrections and helps us do all the things that are right. Well, you know, we're going to do something a little bit different. Normally, I do the section on our history is our strength. But first, what I'd like to do is I'd like to introduce Dr. Kim Hester Williams, introduce her. She's sitting right across from me in the studio here. And I'm just so excited to have you here. It's okay, I call you Kim.
Please do.
I'm so happy to have you here, Kim. I want to call you Dr. Kim because I can't help it. I am so proud when women come in with a doctorate. I don't know. I just want to shout it on the heavens to say, here's another woman doctor, because at one time women could not get doctorate. So it's, and especially women of color. Oh my God. I mean, when you start thinking about some of the advances we've made, and I think that's why they want to take so much away from us. Well, like I'm now at the beginning of the show, I'm having a little bit trouble with my site. I normally read the whole thing, a bio for my guests, and Kim's been on the show before, and I have done that, and I thought, let me find out a little bit about her. So let's start out. Kim, tell us a little bit about yourself. Give a little bit of a background, where you came from, how you got interested in women and gender, and just whatever you feel in your heart, in your mind, that you need to let us know about you.
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Elaine, for inviting me to be on the show today in person for the first time. I'm thrilled to be here with you and Ken. I love this show, and I love Elaine. I just have to say that. And call me whatever you want, Elaine. We are fast friends. We met each other, I think it was 2021, I want to say. It might have been 2019.
It was in Petaluma.
When they had the anniversary of the, I should know this too, it was the anniversary of suffrage. It was the we were celebrating, I think, the 100th anniversary of the suffrage movement, or women succeeding in that movement. So that just is a segue into myself being, you know, the daughter of a very strong woman who raised us to be very empathetic human beings. By myself and my two brothers, I grew up in L.A. She came out here. She was pregnant. She had me. I was small. She wasn't in the greatest relationship or marriage. So she suffered through a lot. And she became, you know, basically a breadwinner in our family. She was the person who worked consistently and provided us with, living, you know, took care of us, nurtured us, taught us to be good human beings in the world, which is something my mom strongly believes in. And also really, for many, many African Americans, all the African Americans I know, all the black people I know, valued education very much. And that was something, that was the number one thing, that you couldn't come home with B's or C's. You had to excel in education because that was your way of excelling in society. And it was also your way of confronting the discrimination, the disparities, frankly, the racism, the racial trauma. Education was the key. Empathy and education, those were the two things that my mom taught me.
Let me ask you a question. You know, when I'm listening to the story about your mother particularly, and seeing, you know, being African American, some of the limitations that you had, and at the same time she's inspiring you to move forward, what do you think was her inspiration? I mean, what do you think was influencing her at that time? You know, because we have to understand, you know, I think what happens with women, they don't quite realize what we went through before we had women's rights. you know, before we even had a celebrating the fact that we even had got the vote. It was like, oh, big deal, we got the vote. But then all of a sudden in the 70s when the women's movement started moving forward. So where did your mother, and I know with my own mother, you know, I think where she got her tenacity was she was going to move forward even though she was a child of an immigrant. So what do you think it was with your mother and your family?
That's a great question that I have an answer to, and that is that my mom was the daughter of sharecroppers in South Carolina, Utahville, South Carolina. So the value of hard work in general was something that was never lost upon her and her siblings. My great-grandfather was enslaved, and then my grandfather became a sharecropper. My grandmother was a person who also worked, you know, on the land and worked the home, and my great-grandmother was Cherokee. So there's this rich background of people who valued the land and valued work and valued just the sense of community and family. And I don't know that I would use the word uplift, which is a very, it's actually a technical term in Black studies. Uplift and Black respectability, that's something that Black people have, you know, really worked hard to be respected. You know, the idea of personhood for Black people doesn't come naturally or automatically because of the history of slavery in the United States and in the Americas in general. So there's just this sense that you have to work hard to be respected. You have to work hard in order to protect yourself and your family. And so that's my mom grew up with, you know, a sharecropper background with her parents. And they valued education because really every generation wants the next generation to do better.
Always. In fact, when I think about my own mother, she was actually the first one in her family to graduate high school. And that was such a big deal. You know, the first one, you know, it was like, here they come to America and the struggle. And with your people, they were here 400 years. And my God, I mean, I can't even, when I think about, even think about that, it just gives me the chills. I mean, it aggravates me that human beings, in fact, right now in my own life, you know, since I injured myself and I've had quite a bit of time, I just sit in a chair and think a lot. I keep thinking, why is it we call ourselves a Christian nation? And I just found out that during slavery, the slave owner was actually had a special Bible for African Americans.
That's correct.
This way they say, oh, you may be suffering now, but you're going to go to heaven after this is all over, you know, and give them this false sense of something, of reality. And I think to myself, we call ourselves a Christian nation. You know, love your neighbor as yourself. You know, one nation under God on our money and how we're carrying on.
Yes.
Well, that's great that you gave this insight. Now let's talk a little bit about you. You know, what were some of your struggles? Here you went, if you could share what you have your PhD in, what motivated you to do that? And now here you are at Sonoma State teaching women and gender studies. And as you know, I'm an alumni. I was actually part of the first group that taught women. I mean, we actually taught classes. I actually taught the class called Survival as a Mother. And I was actually picketed because they wanted men. I mean, it's another story in itself. But tell us a little bit about yourself, what you got your PhD and how you ended up in women's studies. And then later on, it became women and gender studies. And why do you feel that's important?
Well, I have always loved literature, and so I want to say that my degrees are in literature, but I focused on Black studies, Black literature, and women's literature. I'll tell this funny story. I went to the JC, LA Community College, first before I transferred to UC Santa Cruz. And the reason I wanted to become a professor was because I took a class called World Literature at the at Los Angeles Community College, and we read Madame Bovary and by Flaubert, and it was one of my favorite books. And it was just really about that character, female character struggles to become self-realized, to use her agency. And I had never encountered anything like that. And of course, it was world literature. It wasn't American based. So it was fascinating to me that I saw some of the struggles that I had experienced as a woman, as a young woman, reflected in that French novel. And so, and the passion, my teacher, who was a male teacher, taught it with such passion. And it just really was infectious. It motivated me. I said, I want to become a teacher. I want to teach literature like this. And so I went to UC Santa Cruz and got my bachelor's degree in English literature. And I had some fabulous female instructors there, professors. Bettina Apthecker, who's a very famous feminist and taught Intro to Feminism, which just blew my mind. I didn't know anything about women's history, at least the depth of it. And so that was just fabulous. And then I went to UC San Diego and got my PhD in literature and continued thinking about culture and gender and race.
Amazing. I just want to show you a little funny story. When you're talking about, you didn't know that women, you know, when, especially Tina Apthecker, oh my God, what a blessing that was to be able to have. I've always wondered, one of the women we're going to cover, I believe, is Angela Davis. I always wished I could have a class by Angela Davis just to be in her presence, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just amazing. But a funny story is that Molly McGregor and I went to Sonoma State. That's my claim to fame. I always say I was friends with Molly, and we've remained friends all these years. And we're walking to school, we're walking to class one day, and she starts telling me, she says, oh, Elaine, I'm so excited, you know, J.J. Wilson, she was one of our professors then, and she was very gung-ho with women's rights and all that, and that, all that great stuff. She says her and Karen, I believe it was Karen Anderson, are writing this book on women on art. And I said, oh, are there women artists? You know, as if I never thought in terms of a woman being an artist. And what's so interesting, I watched this show that's very, very interesting. It's called The Antique Roadshow. And somebody had brought this picture. I wish I would have remembered the name of the woman artist. But that's what the woman who evaluated the picture, how women were never acknowledged just to be artists, a simple thing like being an art.
Yes.
So I think it's amazing. It's amazing. So what brought you to Sonoma State? And how did you land here?
I actually landed here because at the time, my husband at the time was in law school at USF. So I came back up from UC San Diego while I was writing my dissertation. I had finished my classes and I came back up here to be with him in the Bay Area. And I started teaching all over. I taught at East Bay. I taught at Laney. I taught at Sonoma State. I taught at Berkeley Community College, which was Vista Community College when I taught at it, when I taught there. So I just was what they call a freeway flyer lecturer, teaching everywhere while I was finishing my dissertation. And then I started teaching as a lecturer in American Multicultural Studies at Sonoma State. I'm teaching black literature classes, and also teaching in women's and gender studies, intro classes, and general education classes, GE classes. And then 2 years after I was a lecturer in that department, a job in a position in 19th century American literature came up. And that happened to be my training from UC San Diego, working with, you know, slave narratives, spiritual narratives, the 19th century in general. And I subbed for a class on transcendentalism at Sonoma State that Bill Lee was teaching, and he had to step out of. So I finished the semester in that class, and then I got the job just shortly after that. The job came up. He retired. I got the position in 19th century American literature, and the rest is literally history. I've been teaching at Sonoma State for 27 years, actually.
Yeah, you don't look over 27 years. I mean, it's kind of interesting.
Thank you.
No, seriously, when you start thinking, when you start looking into years, you know, like even for myself, like I said, I woke up, what, tomorrow you're going to be 85? What happened? What was I doing all that time?
Oh, you were doing a lot. You've been doing a lot.
I just didn't know what I was. It's just amazing. Well, you know, when you came, I want to ask you something about Sonoma State. When you came there, was it women and gender at the time, or was it just women?
It was women's and gender studies, and I'm glad you asked that question because the women's and gender studies faculty, a good friend of mine, Charlene Tung, all of those faculty, by the way, are outstanding, phenomenal.
They always were.
Phenomenal people, phenomenal faculty, and have taught me so much. And I used to say women and gender studies. And then one day in an email, she corrected me, women's with an apostrophe S and gender studies, which is the proper way to refer to it that I learned. And I just, you know, I really don't know how I was able to connect with them and start teaching classes, but those are my favorite classes. I've taught, well, one of my favorite classes to teach, and a popular one, is feminist sci-fi. Students love thinking about the women in horror and science fiction and gothic studies. And let's think about the most famous one that everybody knows, and that's Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And Mary Shelley, whose mother was a very famous feminist, you know, Mary Wollstonecraft, who wrote this treatise on women's rights in the 18th century. You know, so it's this history is so long and so rich of women in literature expressing the experiences of women, and really sort of giving us not only the insight. Another one I'm thinking of course, is a very popular Charlotte Perkins Gilman's The Yellow Wallpaper, which my students already automatically know before I even teach it to them. And of course, all the women's literature by women of color. You know, thinking of Lucille Clifton, Zora Neale Hurston, obviously Maya Angelou, Toni Morrison, who happens to be my favorite, I just confess.
Well, you know, it's so interesting when you talk about women in literature, especially women of color in literature. You know, it's almost like you don't know that these things exist. I mean, that was the value of Women's History and what the Women's History Project and Alliance Now. That was an amazing that we had got a whole month. But you know what's also surprising to me that just blows me away? How many people not only don't know that we have a month of Women's History, but that they don't even know that it was created here at Sonoma State. At Sonoma State in Sonoma County was the jump-off point. In fact, I love when Molly McGregor tells the story when the Jimmy Carter's office, President Carter's office, called to let her know. She said she just held the phone like, oh, is this really the president's office? You know, like all of a sudden telling her that there's a whole month of women's history. Well, before we take, I want to take a little bit of a musical break here. I want to play this song by Earth Mom. It's called We Were Made for These Times, which is a reminder. And then we're going to talk about some of the women's shoulders that we are standing on. But before we do that, can you give us a quick overview of what's happening in Sonoma State? I mean, is women's studies still going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Is it still in, what's going on? Do you know by any chance?
I do. We received a terrible email on January 22nd from the interim president about cutting programs like women's and gender studies and philosophy and other programs. And I will say that the faculty right now are fighting back, and the students are fighting back, and the alumni are fighting back. The entire community is rallying, and even our legislators are coming together to stop these horrible cuts, these tragic cuts to programs, and to also faculty like the Women's and Gender Studies faculty, who again, Don Romsberg, Charlene Tung, Patricia Kimmerer Hall, Lena McQuaid, these are valued, very, very highly valued faculty who have done not only taught many generations of students about women's and gender studies, gender sexuality, but also work in the community, spread throughout the community their lecture series where they bring in community members. So all of those, that influence, that very wide influence, has produced, a very solid community of activists and people who are fighting against these cuts. So what I can tell you, the latest update is that we don't know. They are reconsidering some of the cuts. They are asking for proposals to save programs. They are saying that meaning the administration, the Sonoma State Administration and the Chancellor's Office, if there's more money that comes in, which programs should be restored. And I can tell you for myself, the most important program, and I will say this publicly, that should be restored as women's and gender studies. It's unimaginable not to have women's and gender studies at Sonoma State or any university for that matter.
You know, it's so interesting, you know, Kim, I was turned on Facebook one evening, and all of a sudden I forgot. I don't even know who it was that lectured. But one of the things that came up about what is the fear? Why is there so much division, say, among men and women? And what's the fear of men? I mean, you know, in religious history, the women are told to be silent in the church, that they really have nothing to say. You know, then all of a sudden you have women's studies, and all of a sudden it's opening new areas for women. I know for myself, when I came to Sonoma State, I had no idea that most of my life what was happening was because I was a woman. You know, I thought, wow, you know, and then when I met my women of color friends, I thought, oh my God, you know, at least I have my skin, I can walk in, I can tell them I'm anything I want to tell them. You know, but a woman of color doesn't have that option. You're who you are, period, and you're judged almost immediately. But what the lecturer brought up, it says that oftentimes that they felt that the fear that men had, and it goes all the way back hundreds and hundreds of years, is the fact that women give birth, that they have this magic in their body that suddenly life comes out, and maybe the men feel inadequate or something, or they want to have some sort of domination over them. And so I just don't quite understand why that is happening. What stops us from being... from having some sort of equality, not only with gender, but just with color?
That is a very good question. It's the crucial question. We've been asking that question for hundreds of years. And when talking to you, and I love the way you articulated it, which makes me, I hope this show is being recorded so I can play it for my students. Because what you just said is crucial to a book that they're reading now that I've already mentioned. And that's Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, the novel published in 1818, British Romanticism, answers your question. Shelley produces this idea of this creature that Dr. Frankenstein makes because he can't create. He can't give birth. So this is his way of giving birth. And once he does it, he can't handle it. And so I think if you want the answer to your question, or if anyone listening wants the answer to their question, the very first thing I would recommend is to revisit Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and the writings of her famous feminist mother, Mary Wollstonecraft.
Well, who would ever know? Who would ever know that Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is going to answer this huge question that we're all afraid to look at? You
well,
know?
She tried to answer it. I'm not sure that she answered it,
but she certainly gives
us a point of entry. A way of trying to understand it, because it's a quagmire. It is absolutely a dilemma, and it's hard to wrap your mind around it, as you so well articulated. It's kind of crazy making, to tell you the truth.
It is, and I think that's why women went crazy.
And I want to say, I mentioned Don Romsberg's name out of the four faculty in Women's and Gender Studies. I mentioned the lone soul man first, because I really believe that this is a moment for solidarity. This is a moment for us to understand that the only way we're going to change any of this, racism, sexism, misogyny, anti-immigrant, you know, xenophobia, all of that, is to have solidarity, to have allies. And the fact that you have this fabulous, you know, gender and sexuality studies person, Don Romsberg, teaching in women's and gender studies, is really important. Men need to become feminist.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because when I was in the hospital, you know, I was in the hospital twice. I mean, my God, what a journey I've been on. I'd go, whoa. But anyway, one of the things that I would remind all my male nurses is before the women's movement, men could not be nurses and women couldn't be doctors. I mean, and now it's such a refreshing with men. And you know, it's very, and I got to tell
Absolutely.
This story. I got to tell this story, and I don't care how people take it. I was in the hospital. I couldn't walk. They had to do everything for me, including wiping my butt. Okay. Well, there was this wonderful, wonderful nurse. His name was Michael. Okay. And all of a sudden, you know, I had to do what I had to do, and I'm standing there, and all of a sudden he's wiping my butt. He was an African-American young man, handsome, like you would not believe, with these, perfect glasses on him. He's so handsome, I couldn't stand it. And so he's wiping my butt, and I looked at him. I says, Michael, I says, do you realize that you're wiping the butt of an 85-year-old white woman, and you're an African-American man? And he looked at me and he says, there are no boundaries when it comes to healing, Elaine. And that answered, there was no boundaries. Here was this man. I didn't care if he was a kangaroo. He was helping me. And there was no boundary there. And in my mind, I have no boundary anyway, because you through your evolution, you begin to see people as kin. We're all, like you say, allies. I say kin. Like we're children of the earth. You know, we're related. You know, we're just related. And that is that simple to me. But when he said that, that was amazing. So, Kim, we're going to take a musical break. I'm going to play Earth Mama's song, Made for These Times, because you are definitely made for these times. And I mean, all this information, even though we're struggling, you know, the first letter in struggling is S. We're on a spiritual journey. We're on a journey to find the truth. And I love this song by Earth Mama, and she is just amazing. Now, when we come back, who's the first woman you're going to talk about, our Women in History segment? Who would you, the first woman you'd like to talk
about?
Well,
I'm going to go off list because of what you just said about Ken, and that is Octavia Butler, actually.
Okay, we're going to talk about Octavia Butler, which is until I met you, I never even knew she existed. So let's go ahead, Ken. Let's play For These Times by Earth Mama. And when we come back, I will continue this very exciting and earth-moving conversation with Dr. Kim Hester Williams from Sonoma State University, who is a proud teacher of women and gender studies and also in all kinds of various literatures, and brings to the table so much information. So thank you again, Kim, for being here. Let's go ahead, Ken.
We are men.
Yes, 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 yes. We are made for these times. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm really excited to have with me right across from the table right here to have Dr. Kim Hester Williams from Sonoma State. And also, I just want to remind my listeners, the opinions here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back, and now we're going to go into Women's Spaces. Our history is our strength. And why do I say that? Why do I say our history is our strength? Because it's our history that tells us what we did right, what we did wrong, how we can improve on what we did right, how we can get rid of what we did wrong, and how we can move forward in more and more positive ways. And I believe in my heart of hearts, our first priority should be peace on earth. I mean, you know something? We can invent an airplane that defies all gravity. Look what's happening, all this talk about AI and all these things on the computer. If we can invent all these fantastic, I mean, Just think of what penicillin has done, what the polio vaccine has done. And we have, and look, my knee, I fell on my knee and fractured it in three places, and they can put me in a surgery room, knock me out cold, and repair the damage. And we can't figure out how to have peace on earth. Oh, there's something wrong here. Anyway, I don't want to get on my soapbox.
I love it.
You know how it is, because it's so true. I mean, can
100%.
You know, we invent an airplane. We defy gravity. And just in case you haven't noticed, guys, we don't fall off the earth. I mean, if that isn't a great mystery, I don't know. And yet we can't live in peace. But let's start. We're going to start. I have Dr. Kim Hester Williams here in the studio with me, and we're going to be talking about several women of color that are very dear to her heart. And I know number one, who is Octavia Butler.
Yes.
And okay, talk about her. Tell us about her and what inspired you to find, when you found her, what was the biggest lesson that she gave you?
Well, the first book I read by Octavia Butler is one that is not as well known as some of the others, Kindred and Parable of the Sower, and, you know, those books are very well known, her vampire series. But the first book I read was Wild Seed, and a colleague who was leaving Sonoma State to go to teach at another university was cleaning out her office and just gave me her copy of Wild Seed, which is a novel, you know, it's a science fiction novel about these two characters who are you know, live forever. They can't die. These two immortals, and one is a male figure, Doro, who's more monstrous figure, and the other is a shapeshifter, Anyanwu. And so the novel is So different than anything I had ever read. And it basically is about the reconciliation of these two opposing figures, with a male kind of ego figure and a female kind of communal figure, who is a nurturer, who is taking care of a village and a community, who gets basically, I want to say, I enslaved by Doro. Doro finds her, sees how powerful she is, and basically captures her and keeps her captive. But she refuses that captivity in various ways because she's a shapeshifter. At one point in the novel, she turns into a dolphin, for instance. And so what you were talking, you played the Earth Mother song. There's this sense in Octavia Butler's work of this interconnectedness of the earth, of humans, of species beings, as we like to say, in environmental studies and ecological studies. So that's what drew me to her, to the thinking about how she reimagines kinship. And, of course, one of her very famous books, as I said, is Kindred. And that book I highly recommend. It's very popular. A lot of people know it. Students love that book. About, you know, a black woman in the 1970s who's forcibly time traveled back to save a young white man, a young white boy, Rufus, who is the son of a slaveholder, and trying to get him to be more empathetic. That's a running theme today, empathy and kinship. Those books changed my life. They changed my thinking about what is possible.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you talk about you ask that question, you know, what is it that keeps us so apart? You know, and I think it's that we don't know each other. And what you're talking about, a lot of things about these books, is they take you on a journey of somebody else's life so you really understand it. And you mentioned about the importance of compassion and empathy. You know, right now there's a lot of anger going on. You know,
yes.
they want to hang this one,
yes.
this one.
You know, deport that one.
Yeah, even on yes. the right and the left. I mean, mm-hmm. it's coming from both areas. And I was thinking to myself, I said, you know, we've had revolutions. I mean, someone said I was watching something, a lecture, someone said, well, the United States had 240 some odd years. It's amazing that it's finally falling apart. And I thought to myself, well, what makes it fall apart? And I really believe that we, because of our separatism.
Yes, I think that's right. Well, we're one of the most diverse nations, right? So this is the thing. To try, it is, as the founding fathers, quote unquote, designed it, it's an experiment, right, in democracy, in freedom. And even Jefferson says in the Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of happiness, which is a radical idea for a nation state to actually inculcate in their founding documents, in their founding ideology, the idea of it's okay and, in fact, encouraged to be happy. I want to say one of the most compelling ideas of Octavia Butler is in her Parable of the Sower novel and series, in which she coins the term hyper-empathy, which is what the character Lauren Olamina has, is this kind of syndrome or this kind of condition in which she feels the pain of other people.
So she has empathy.
So she, but it's something in which if someone gets shot, she feels that pain, that shooting, anything like that. Like, she literally has this this visceral, physical hyper-empathy. It's not just a psychological or an emotional hyper-empathy or empathy. It's actually physical. She can physically feel the pain of others. So I think that Butler comes up with that in order to get us to understand how crucial it is that the only way that we will get to the place that you've talked about, which is a place of peace and equanimity, right? And real interrelatedness that's meaningful, that is not harmful or violent. The only way we will get there is if we begin to put ourselves, as my mother used to say all the time when I was growing up, in someone else's shoes.
Well, like, don't judge somebody until you walk a mile in their moccasins,
exactly.
You know?
I mean,
it's that simple. It's that simple. Well, Octavia Butler.
Boy,
I'll tell you, sometimes I have a little bit of a problem with names, even hearing them. But let's get a little bit more modern. I'm going to pick who I'd like to choose.
Okay, please do.
Because one of my favorites is Angela Davis.
Ah.
You know, and why she's one of my favorites is because, after all, you know, my age group, we were part of the women's movement, part of the civil rights movement, and I remember so well when she was arrested. I remember so well when, you know, she thought she'd maybe spend life in jail. I mean, it was an amazing process that we went through. So talk a little bit about Angela Davis. Why do you believe that she's such an important part of this story of women and women's history?
Well, let me just first say that right before I graduated from UC Santa Cruz in the English Literature Department, in the English Department, Angela Davis came to UC Santa Cruz to be a professor. And I didn't get a chance to take any classes with her, but I certainly got a chance to speak with her, spend time with
her.
Yes, absolutely. And she is an amazing person. First of all, her self-possession, her confidence, and her intellect is astounding. That's the word I will use. She is an astounding person because of how much she knows, how much knowledge she can hold, how articulate she is, and also just, again, how self-possessed she is, how confident she is. I would really encourage people to look up her speeches, to look up the videos and the interviews with Angela Davis. She has such a clarity of mind about equality, equality on all levels, trans equality, women's equality, of course, black equality. It's just astounding. And it is so crucial to get us past the point that you're talking about. She actually answers in all of her writing, for instance, you know, she talks about what it takes to have a world where without violence and a world of where we respect each other's sovereignty, individual sovereignty and agency, and the agency, the way she used her agency on behalf of others, on behalf of equality, on behalf of a kind of righteous dignity for and respect for humankind is a lesson that we can all take.
Well, you know, it's as I'm listening to you and as I can hear her speeches, I love the way she talks. I mean, she talks very slow and very precise. And, you know, you don't miss a word because, you know, she has a certain pace. I just admire her so, so much. I mean, I'm so jealous that she even got to just shake her hand. I mean,
be in her presence is quite something, I have to say. Because she just knows. She understands. Her training, her academic training is philosophy. So she does move in the world as a philosopher.
But don't you think, I mean, I'm going to say it out. This is what I really think. When I think of myself as being brought up in Jewish household, I understand what oppression is. Even though I could go and change my name and change my religion, nobody has to know the difference. But don't you feel, because when you have a population that comes out of 400 years of slavery, that they really understand what it is to lose freedom, what it is to be without your rights, without having, you know, what right now they're trying to oppress the newspapers. They're trying to oppress freedom of speech. You know, I don't know. I think something was declared maybe that the insurrectionists, if they go and they protest Tesla, or all this stuff that's going on. People don't understand. You know, once you lose something, to gain it back is almost three times as hard as when you first got it.
Correct.
So I think when I think of Angela Davis, I think of that's what she really under. It's in her. It's in that DNA.
Yes.
You know, of all those years of oppression. So Angela,
she sacrificed her freedom because she understood what freedom actually means.
Exactly.
That if one person is unfree, then we're all unfree.
You know, when I was chosen to be the speaker in my graduation in 1975 when I graduated, and one of the things that I used was Ernest E. Debs when he said, if there's one person in jail, I am not free. And all of a sudden, they wanted to stop that. They wanted, because that was too socialistic, because he was a, and Marjorie Downing Wagner said, wait a minute. We're under First Amendment rights. She's not telling you to go take over. She's just telling you that as if there's one person in jail, I am not free. I mean, it's that simple. I take it down to this with war. If there's one child in danger, your child's in danger.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just the way it is. Well, we're starting to run out of time.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
It feels like we've been talking for 5 minutes.
I know. It's been amazing. So, you know, there was another person, Lydia.
Lydia Maria Child, very famous feminist, first wave feminist from the 19th century, and people don't know her. Over the River and Through the Woods is a song that a lot of people know, folk song, a little song that people, I won't sing it because I'm not really good at singing on the spot, but that's a song people know. Well, she coined that song. She was one of the most famous abolitionists. She was a definitely a suffragist. She was a person who was a prolific writer, and just people can look up Lydia Maria Child or Lydia M. Child, and they will see the National Park Service has a dedication to her. The Abolitionist Museum has a dedication to her. She wrote a book on a treatise, anti-slavery treatise. Very sort of dense argument and very rich and compelling argument against slavery. She was an abolitionist first and foremost, a white woman with children, who talked about the importance of domesticity, because that was where women's morality sort of centered around taking care of children and taking care of the home. So she has a lot of tracks about domesticity. But first and foremost, she believed in black freedom, a white woman who fought fiercely on behalf of black freedom. And sincerely so, was dedicated to it and was willing to make sacrifices for it. She's one of my favorite figures of the 19th century.
What do you think gave her that experience, that knowledge?
That's a great question. We don't have a lot of time, so I'm not going to get into my professorial mode other than to say that many of these 19th century white writers were part of the abolitionist movement. They were religiously inclined as Christians to believe in freedom and anti-slavery. They had morals, exactly. But before we go, I do want to mention an indigenous woman that also people should look up, and that's Joy Harjo, who's a former National Poet Laureate, and her poem Speaking Tree, which I wish I had time to read, but I don't. But I will ask you all to look up Speaking Tree by Joy Harjo, and just in general to look up the work of indigenous women. I want to just end by saying indigenous women and trans women, very important to see the activism coming out of those communities right now, and we need to support it. And we need to support women's and gender studies, because our freedom lies in gender equality. Gender equality is at the basis of all of the oppressions that we are experiencing now. And you use the S word, so I'll fit in with this, and that's socialism. So indigenous communities teach us how to be communal in a way that is equitable.
Amazing. Amazing the stories of these women, you know, and how they impact us. You know, just listening, when I think of just being a suffragette, or think of Ida B. Wells,
yes,
during the when the women were trying to get the vote, when they had this big parade, and then all of a sudden they tell her to go to the back of the line, and she says, "Are you serious?" and goes to the front of the line, or goes into these areas where lynching are going on. You know, when you start thinking about it, why are we so? We're so stubborn about this. You know, we have to recognize that, you know, the most important thing, you know, there's a song that we sing in unity, "Let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me."
Mm-hmm.
And the first step to peace is to accept one another. Well, Dr. Kim Hester Williams, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being such a great, great guest. Can you give us a quick website, how they can get a hold of you?
Just Kim Hester Williams, if you Google that, even though I don't want to promote Google, but if you do, you'll see my writings, you will see the Sonoma State website that talks about me in the English department, but that's the way, just to go look it up on the internet, and you'll find out about my writings about being, you know, communal, as you said, accepting one another. Thank you for saying that, Elaine, because it is so powerful and it is so crucial, especially right now.
Well, I think the most important question is how did we get here? And if we don't find out how we get here, we're never going to go back. Anyway, this is Elaine B. Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. A special, special thank you for Dr. Kim Hester Williams for being such a great guest. And remember, Women's Spaces is on this evening at 11 o'clock. I'm so excited I get to hear my own program, and I'm really excited about this one. And also a reminder that now we'll be having Elaine Rock on, who will be telling the story of Dusty Rhodes.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, March 17th, 2025.